Are children now more than ever at risk because of our mental health? How are we really doing? When we were younger, I remember life just went on. You know, there wasn't a diagnosis for every feeling or even so-called mood. And today we are talking about our children in this world that is louder, faster, more exciting, more aggressive, more competitive, and perhaps more supportive. I'm Ilana Afrika Breenkamp, and this is another Baby Brunch podcast. Today, we're joined by a psychiatrist and someone that really advocates for our children as well as protecting women, Dr. Tanya van Asbjergen. Thank you so much for joining us on Baby Brunch.
Thank you very much for having me.
If I had to introduce you to anyone in the world, who would you say you are?
I'm a mental health advocate, especially for children and adolescents, and especially for South African children.
Why do we shy away from psychiatrists? What makes you so scary?
I think people don't want to be labeled. And that's why I want to advocate that it's not about the label, it's about talking, it's about being open, supportive. And as South Africans, it takes a village.
It really does. And when I think of how it really takes a village, the other day I took my little girls to dancing and we were busy doing bolas backstage and it was a lot of fun. And at some stage I saw one of the little girls standing in the rain and I said to her, "Ma, wat's fout, liefie?" And so I said, "Mama and papa beklei." And I took her one side and I just said to her, "Onthou, groot mense se goed is nie ons goed nie. You know, adult stuff is not our stuff." And I kind of held her a little bit until the mommy appeared and we said hi. And for a moment there, I thought to myself, should I have done more than what I did in that moment? You know, we're all at dancing, we're in a public space, it's raining. Should I have done more?
Good question. You feel like you should have done more, but honestly, stepping on toes is quite difficult, especially in such an open, space. You don't want to upset somebody more, or you don't know what the response of the parents would have been. But it's so good to have brought that up because, we forget that people or children are so perceptive. We think that just standing to the side, they don't realize, but they pick up on body language. They are so perceptive, and we forget about that. We think that, they can't hear anything, but they are too clever. You can't lie, and you shouldn't lie. And we should take in consideration that we should build trust, and that is the most important. So, no, I think you did the right thing. But people and parents should be more aware that children pick up on everything.
Well, sometimes we don't know what to do, and sometimes we need the help and advice from an expert. So, thanks so much for joining us. Also, a big thank you to our support that's making this possible. Thank you for helping us create Baby Brunch, South Africa's number one parenting podcast.
CuraProx aims to create 1 billion healthy smiles. A healthy mouth means a healthy body and mind, creating better health for you. Great oral health starts from day one. It's never too early to start. CuraProx Baby gets your child on the right path of starting healthy oral care habits for life. This podcast is supported by Epimax, the dermatologist-recommended skincare range specifically formulated to hydrate, soothe, and protect. Whether it's dry skin, sensitive skin, or just everyday moisture, Epimax has a solution for everybody. Fragrance-free, hypoallergenic, and suitable for all ages.
Your study was on, and I should say your recent paper was on attachment. When I saw the details the first time, I was like, attachment, ha, that sounds like me. I want to be attached to my kids only. But this is an actual term, attachment and secure base. When we talk about attachment, what are we referring to?
Good question. So I think a lot of people have heard the term attachment theory, but the details are a bit, sketchy, and people don't understand the terms and terminology used. So attachment theory is basically, we've heard that the first 1,000 days in a child's life is the most important for brain development, social development, etc. Now, attachment is a behavioral system that is actually there for the child to be supported and in a safe environment. So a baby cries for a specific need, and of course the parents respond by obviously proximity. They want to be close to a caregiver, their primary caregiver, which is mostly their mom. And then when they're hungry, they cry, so you get a bottle. Now, as we age, our developmental or, you know, needs change. So we see that in infancy, it's still, they want to be in close proximity to their parents, and that is a need that they want, and it should be fulfilled. As they grow up into middle childhood, that their social circle increases. Now, the parents are still the main attachment figure, and a secure base and safe haven are two aspects of an attachment relationship that is a very good thing to have. So those two terms are really important and very, very good. So a safe haven is a child understands that their parents are there when there's a threat. So, you know, if they are in a fight with a friend, they can return to their parents and they will support them. And a secure base is basically that they know that they have that foundation. They've built, we call it a script. So for instance, our brain wants to conserve energy, you know, for when we're in that fight or flight response, our brain needs to respond quickly. But when we've gone through certain experiences, our brain consolidates that into a script. So when we go to a restaurant, for instance, we know that we sit down, we open a menu, and we order from the waiter what we would like to eat and drink. Now, that is a script. We do it automatically because we've had that experience multiple times. Now, the same in attachment. We build secure base scripts, and that is consistent support from parents. So if you go to your parent in a specific, if there's a specific threat or moment, and you receive consistent support from that parent, you build a script, and then it becomes automatic. So then children feel safer, and they go out and explore the world, and that's what we want. We want them to explore the world and create different scripts and experience life and live. So that's why a secure-based script is so important. And it is built throughout childhood. It does consolidate, which means it's you know, it's imprinted, but we can still change it. And that's what my research was about, is in middle childhood in South Africa, we know that attachment theory does apply to the South African context. But in middle childhood, what support do our children in South Africa need? And we found that family conflict is one, and it was prevalent in South Africa sooner than it was in other Western countries. Social conflict, because in middle childhood, you expand your social context. And also academic stress. And that for me was important, is where the school environment also comes in.
So we've established now that attachment and a secure base is a good thing.
Very good thing.
What happens as a baby, your mom or your parents or the caregiver or your caregivers have not practiced a healthy environment for you to feel secure in the secure base, and there was questions around how attached they should be to the little one?
Yes.
Is there a way to correct it?
So yes, there is a way to correct it. You can increase your secure-based experiences. So of course, with family therapy and attachment-based therapy, we can save that relationship. But what happens is that children then develop maladaptive strategies. So they will become dismissive or avoidant attached. And that is maladaptive, but it can also be resilience. So we see that children then, they don't return or come to a parent or a primary caregiver for support. They basically self-soothe or something like similar to that effect. But that is not very good in a longer term aspect for mental health, because they internalize things. Mm. So you want a support base. You want support in the form of going to somebody and having that, you know, guidance, especially like we've seen that with father figures and a mother, they have different support roles in a child's life. So we see that fathers are more equipped with practical knowledge and practical. They'll go to a father figure to say, this broke, or please teach me how to ride a bicycle, where the mom gives more comfort and other solutions. So even there's a different role for each parent, but if they don't foster that consistent caregiving and support, then we do get maladaptive strategies, and that can lead to mental health problems later on in life.
So if we want to create that environment, ek dink onmiddellik aan, you know, let the baby cry because that way their voice becomes stronger, or let the baby cry because we are sleep training, or you know, any other method where we want children to almost grow up before they've even reached toddler stage.
Well, give me something to cry about.
Yes, you know. What does the first 1,000 days of life then, what should it look like? I mean, I'm thinking of all these practices because I'm curious. You know, how does it change our children and our toddlers when they become tweens and adults? Take me through the first 1,000 days then. So what should that look like when we think of a secure base and attachment?
So the first 1,000 days, that's like the main punchline of, you know, attachment. And there's no specific book or rule that, you know, it should look like this.
Right.
But you are in tune with your child. And when they are crying for proximity, for feeding, for something, respond and be consistent with it. So, you know, it's not about just a little stub of the toe and then, but just be responsive and consistent. That consistency creates that, you know, I can go to my parents, but they will grow up and realize, okay, this is not so bad, but my mom has taught me, or my father has taught me the skills to regulate. They feel your regulation and your emotion regulation and stress regulation. So, you know, it's so important to show them how to deal with certain situations from a very young age, because that's how they regulate their emotions and be able to go back to, we call it homeostasis, is, you know, where your cortisol and your fight or flight response has calmed down. It's not that heightened, you know, we're stuck in fight and flight response because we haven't had that support. But when the support is there and it's consistent and you can regulate your emotions, it's brought down. And you can then experience life and grow in a healthy environment.
The way you describe it makes it feel so calming and beautiful. And I'm thinking of this wholesome home and the secure base and everything's going well. What could shake that secure base? Immediately I'm thinking of some kind of separation or divorce or trauma.
Of course. So divorce, parents that move away for work, poverty, so many like economical, socioeconomical, we hear about these terms, but it does affect. I mean, parents that have to travel for longer periods, that proximity is very important in the earlier days of a child, the presence of a primary caregiver.
I'm immediately thinking of one of our podcasts. We recorded something many years ago where we said, hand over your baby. So it's the notion of going to school, or they're starting play school, and you now need to hand over your baby to the caregiver because mommy or daddy has to return to work. Would something like that influence a secure base or attachment? I mean, is it good or bad? If it was up to me, I would just keep my kids at school, at home, excuse me.
Yeah.
I wouldn't keep them at school. I would just keep my kids at home, because I remember, I mean, handing over my first baby for school the first time, I was sick.
No, of course. I mean, you spend so much time with your child and, you know, now you have to hand them over to a stranger. It does not affect your secure base with the child, because, you know, they know that they come back to you.
Right.
And if you are consistent and they've already built a script, that's not influenced by somebody else. Mm-hmm. You know, they, even in middle childhood, which we call the tweens, mm-hmm. you are still, the primary caregiver is still the primary attachment figure. Although they expand their social network and friends also become a sort of a substitute attachment figure, the parents still remain the primary caregiver and primary attachment figure. So it doesn't change it, but parents need to be aware that how you manage things, that's your attachment bond. That's what you create. And that consistency and experiences you give your child is what they internalize. So if you are inconsistent, if one day you say this, another day you don't respond, and this, they don't know what to get, and it's inconsistent, and their script is, what are we going to get? So I'd rather keep quiet, because I don't know what I'm going to get.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how my mom's going to respond.
Right.
Am I going to get a hiding? Am I, not going to, is she going to ignore me? Am I not going to get a response? So it's consistency. It's building that relationship to know that it doesn't mean that you don't discipline your child, but it's all about consistency. If they come to you with a certain problem, you respond in a certain manner. And I think it's what's most important is we normally wait until these threats or flight or fight response is activated before we actually teach children how to regulate. And then it's emotions are heightened. Mm. Our emotions are heightened.
Terrible twos.
Yes.
They don't listen.
Tangents.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be in that moment that you teach them, now is the time to teach them. It's going through life, walking in the garden, picking the flowers, say, let's practice our breathing, the 4-7-8 method of, you know, regulating our sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. Then it's much easier in the moment to say, I see that you are upset. You have the right to be upset because you cannot play with A, B, and C. But let's think about, you know.
Yeah, well, how so to take this. Response. You said something really valuable that we don't teach in that moment where things are, you know, we've got so much work to do in the calm. Yes. Where when things are calm instead of when things, as if you yield them all off. Immediately I'm thinking of how as parents sometimes we're not present, you know, we're on our phones or we create all these habits that actually influences our secure base and our attachment with our kids and maybe they feel they can't come to us. Now there's a problem and we think, okay, but what do I do now?
Or they might have a different cue, you know, to cue a I want support, but they don't physically or verbally say it. You need to be responsive to your child. It might be from a different temperament that they don't actually say it, but you need to pick up on it and respond supportively in that way of, I hear what you're saying. I hear you. And sometimes we don't have to even respond verbally. We just have to listen and be there in the moment.
Today we are talking mental health and my next question would be, when is the time for intervention? You know, we're talking about our children, mental health. We have established that many years ago, it wasn't the way it is now. You know, we were told to get on with it. Yeah. And now when it comes to our little ones, we actually want to listen.
Mm-hmm. I think we should change the way we think about intervention. Intervention shouldn't be something goes wrong and we intervene. It should be intervention with prevention. We should, you know, we hear about early childhood development, ECD is important. Why do we stop? Why do we intervene when there's something wrong? Why? Why do we have to wait for something to happen to intervene?
When is it time for the psychologist?
There's always time. I think when you realize that you can't give what a child needs, get the support. People are there. We are a village. Get the support. If they withdraw, if they don't enjoy the little things anymore, that's when you go to a psychologist. You might need it more than your child.
Wow.
And that is important. We can't pour from an empty cup. It is so cliche, but so true. We feel, we sometimes also project what we feel onto our children.
Yes, I'm stressed.
Yes.
Oh. You know,
so sometimes a psychologist is just, you know, your child is fine. Why? Neurodiversity, attachment problems, depressed, sad. We all have off days. Mm. Where our children are allowed to have them too. And I also want to emphasize that their prefrontal cortex isn't developed yet. So why do we expect them to react like we would, how we would react? We are the adults. But a psychologist is there to take your hand, walk you through. Developmental periods are very tough for us and our children. It's not a bad thing. We shouldn't be seeing a psychologist like intervention when something's wrong. Sometimes you just need someone to speak to, someone to say, you know, let's look at it from this side. Maybe it's not that bad. Maybe this is the skill. You know, if something happens like that, do this.
When is the time for medicine?
For children, even if we look at the guidelines from World Health Organization, it's the last resort for children. your first line is your psychologist or psychiatrist and therapy, your psychotherapy. But of course, it is a place for medication. But we need to realize that children need to be children. We need to go back to the basics. We need to go back to exercise.
Sunshine.
Exactly. And we live in sunny South Africa.
Yes.
So what are we doing? Take away the iPad. Get outside.
Ooh, doctor, we're going to talk about the iPad just now.
Your serotonin's also produced in your stomach. What you eat, you know, what you surround yourself with. Our children become anxious because they are exposed to media and the news. What's on the news these days? It's just negativity. We create an anxious environment. So I think that medication has a time and a place, but for children, we have to go back to the basics.
Speaking about the basics, so I mean, let's talk about the mind and mental health. Can we say that, and I'm almost saying, when I say this, a part of me is saying, but what are we going to do about it? So that mental health challenges are on the rise for our children.
Yes. No, definitely. We are more aware of it. And also after COVID, we've seen a big, increase in mental health problems in children because they've been isolated. Children report depression and anxiety disorders from a younger age. And it's understandable. It's been, you know, we were in such a whirlwind for the past a few years, and it hasn't really normalized yet.
Is it just COVID? Is it not just family stress? Is it not our language? I don't know, exposure to trauma or I don't know, maybe us as parents, we burnt out.
Definitely. I think, you know, there are so many factors and they all lead and interlink. I mean, we can't just say it's just COVID, it's just this, but it's all interlinking and our environments are changing. So genetic environment interactions, our environments are changing, our environment has changed. So I think that's also a place where we have to look for intervention is our environments. What has changed? What are we changing in our environments that has been, for instance, our children? They are not being children at school anymore. It's from grade one, they do speeches, they do this, they do that. We never did that. So what in our environment has changed to push our children to report these behavioral and psychological problems from a younger age?
How much of our children's mental well-being has to do with social media and their devices?
It's definitely a factor. We are going into a generation where it's instant gratification, comparison, isolation, bullying. It's faceless. It's much easier to bully through a screen. So yes, I definitely think it has a big impact on mental health in today's environment and society. But it is a very, big topic. We can say so many things about it, the good and the bad. So yes, I do think it's one of the factors that contribute to it.
When you said the word bullying, I could feel my eyes burn.
Yeah.
Bullies. So doctor, I've got a few questions here from a few moms. I'm going to play it to you on my phone and perhaps you can give advice.
If you have a child that doesn't really talk that much, what are the signs to look out for when they're struggling at school? How will a parent know?
So shy child, doesn't speak too much. How do we know if they're really struggling? They always come home quiet. How was your day?
Okay.
How are you? Fine.
Very good question. I think, that's got a lot to do with temperament. But we need to create a space where we're not just talking about the bad things. I think we need to, you know, make it a daily thing about what made you happy today. Create also a space where you as parents talk about your feelings. So it doesn't become a thing where it's, I'm put on the spot. They need to know everything in my life. I must now open about my feelings. Parents also need to show that it's okay to speak about your feelings. Today I was really irritated by A, B, and C. Or today I was really happy or enlightened by something that happened. So create a narrative that you don't always just have to speak about your bad things or the feelings that make you upset or what's happening that's bad. We need to create a conversation for everything. So then it's much easier for a child to open up. But definitely withdrawal, I think withdrawal is the main thing. Even if a child is quiet, if they withdraw from things that have made them happy, even if that's a game that they play, if they withdraw from that, that's a serious indication of something is wrong.
Talking about early signs, I mean, if we do look in our tweens in later years, after our 1,000 days and we being mommy and daddy and parents, what are some of the other early signs to look out for?
You know, that's it's very dependent on the child's temperament. But as I say, withdrawal and lack of engaging in activities of your daily mundane things. If they don't want to go to a friend's party anymore, if they don't want to interact, that is a big indication that something's not going well. And they can't see the good and nothing's really fulfilling them anymore.
Immediately, I want to bring a solution. You know, I'm thinking here of sleeping longer. You know, if it was up to me, some days when they haven't had a good day at school, I want to bring them home and we're not going to go to school ever again. But we can't live that kind of life, right? So share a simple exercise with us. I'm thinking of something that's a building block for good mental health in the day in a routine of a parent with a child that goes to school. What does it look like? I mean, how do we strengthen this emotional connection with our children so that we know when something is the matter?
I think what's really important is having that time at the dinner table, eating together, no phones, just, you know, being present. Doesn't have to be an activity where you have to be put on the spot, but just being present, having dinner together is a simple, it's a way of therapy sometimes, that, you know, children that have food, you know, that they're sensitive to certain types of food or the textures or whatever, they are much more open for certain things if they are sitting with their parents or family around a dinner table. That opens up space to just talk, and you'll pick up on things that maybe when I asked that question, they responded differently to what they would normally, but you're present. You've realized it, where if you are busy and they are trying to get your attention, you don't always pick up on it. So that dinner table talks and presence for me is the most important in a normal day for any household and family.
I quite enjoy it so I have two girls that are with me, so we brush hair.
Yes.
And during hair brushing, everything comes out. Like, everyone has a story. I hear what happened yesterday. I get all the stories, so I keep brushing.
But that's good. Yeah. It's a everyday activity. Yeah. But there's a connotation with it, like a connection between you and your girls. And I think that's the most important. We don't make it a thing, like, come sit here, we're now going to draw this, this, and this. It's a everyday activity, but you make it special and you are present.
We have one more question from a mommy. I got sent this, and it's about social media and children.
So my question is around children and social media and children and online activities. I'm really worried about the effects it has on the social wellness and the mental wellness of children. My daughter seems to move away from face-to-face interaction and leaning more towards being online with her friends playing games. And I'm worried that this is going to set a precedent in terms of how she interacts with adults when she's older. So what do I do about that when it becomes clear after COVID that being online and interacting with friends online seems to take precedent over anything else?
Very good question. I think us as adults, we're also guilty of that. I think we'd rather send a WhatsApp or an email than actually phone somebody. So yes, I think it's always been a problem, but COVID has really increased the online activities of everybody. And children do become isolated. You know, they lock themselves into a room where they play online games. So I think that's where boundaries come in. And children flourish on boundaries. It looks like harsh parenting, or, you know, what people think of authoritative parenting styles or corporal punishment. All those things come back into play if we say boundaries, but that's not it. Boundaries, children love boundaries. Mm-hmm. They flourish. Their brain needs boundaries. The same with, you know, neurodiverse. We're all part of the neurodiversity, but certain brains just function in mm-hmm. categories. And we need boundaries for children. And that's where the boundary comes in. You can play a game, but then you have to do this and that. So boundaries, that's what we need.
Doctor, if we had to rebuild and start from the beginning, van vooraf, what would we focus on first when it comes to the mental health of our children?
I think we should focus on listening rather than reacting. We are so quick to react and want to give advice. And we know we the adults, let me tell you how we did it. Or we need to listen to our children. We need to be in tuned and present and use the support structures that are available. Can't do it alone. So use the psychologist, use a psychiatrist, use therapy, but don't do it alone and don't pour from an empty cup.
Tanya van Asbjergen's biography will be on our website, babybrunch.co.za. What a way to start the new year. Happy New Year!
2026.
Happy 2026. Doctor, thanks for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we hope that all the people that you help, that they will thrive. And thanks for joining us on Baby Brunch.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for listening to this podcast. A quick thanks to our support. This podcast is supported by Epimax, the dermatologist-recommended skincare range specifically formulated to hydrate, soothe, and protect. Whether it's dry skin, sensitive skin, or just everyday moisture, Epimax has a solution for everybody. Fragrance-free, hypoallergenic, and suitable for all ages. Curaprox aims to create 1 billion healthy smiles. A healthy mouth means a healthy body and mind, creating better health for you. Great oral health starts from day one. It's never too early to start. Curaprox Baby gets your child on the right path of starting healthy oral care habits for life.